Coming up on Chasing the Natty, week 11 of the college fantasy football season is here, and it is crunch time for you playoff hopefuls everywhere. As always, I'll be giving you guys a couple of players at each of the main positions that I am starting, a couple of whom that I'll be sitting, and then I'll be finishing up with some of your fan-submitted sit questions. I've got all of that and more, so let's lock in and secure you guys your tickets to your CFF postseasons. This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Wednesday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday and Wednesday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campusofcanton.com, subscribe there with any of our extraordinary tiers. You'll find everything you need for your CFF, Devy, C2C, and betting needs, whether that's articles, rankings, projections, tools, and even more than that. You can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at CFF underscore Jared, and the show is at Chasing the Natty. And if you guys have not already, go ahead and show us some love by leaving a like, a comment, and a subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you leave a five-star review. Make sure you're following the show. Not only does that show us support, but you're also showing the game of college fantasy football in general a ton of support when you guys do that. So we do our part, you guys do your part. With all that being said, y'all, week 11's here already, and quite an important week, as I kind of touched on earlier this week when I did the waiver show. Pretty much in every league, you're fighting for something, right? Either if maybe you've already locked your spot into the postseason, but maybe you're a six-team playoff and you're trying to fight for a bye. Shoot, even if you're in a four-team playoff, and you got this week and next week, right? You're still fighting to either secure a spot this week, or you're fighting to secure a spot this week, or you're just trying to put yourself in a better position so that you can kind of sneak your way into next week. Regardless, like, it's crunch time pretty much everywhere in CFF circles, which is all the more reason why we have to get these sits and starts right this week. And so we'll get into all that here in just one second, pretty much now, actually, because I don't really have anything else really to say. Again, we're just kind of at that point in the season where you guys know the drill, I know the drill, so let's kind of hop right into it, I guess. Let's move on over to our sit starts for this week. For those of you that for some reason are joining us this late in the season, first of all, welcome. Always appreciate you guys, even if you're a little late to the train for this season. But I always appreciate you guys coming in regardless. Just a reminder to everybody, again, the show is broken down into three segments. We'll go over my starts for this week. We will go over my sits for this week. My starts are players that are outside the top 60 at their respective positions that I think will go off this week. Sits are players that are inside the top 40 that are either facing bad matchups this week, they're on a skid that makes them not startable, in my opinion, or things like that, right? And then last but not least, you guys did an awesome job this week sending me some start sit questions. I think it's probably the most we've gotten in a while. And you guys gave me some real doozies to look over for today. Speaking of just me, myself, and I, that was the one thing I forgot to mention. Justin's not joining us tonight. He is taking care of some personal business this week. So always look forward to having him back next week. And I miss him dearly today. But you guys get little old me. But that also means you get double my starts and double my sits for this week. So I guess, in a way, there is some good news for you guys on that front. Speaking of which, let's go ahead and get on over to the starts. Again, just repeating myself here again, but again, these are players outside the top 60 in their respective positions that I think are in for really good weeks this week. So we'll start with our quarterbacks. And this is a guy that I mentioned on this week's waiver show. If you read my waiver article, I talked about him there as well, particularly because of just how great this matchup is this week. Parker Navarro, quarterback out of Ohio. He's going up against Kent State. Really outside of Miami of Ohio, like, Navarro's been everything you want in a CFF quarterback over the last 4 weeks, right? Again, 33.46 points versus Akron, 33.48 points versus Central Michigan, 25 points this past week against Buffalo. This Bobcats offense has been humming along, and even with the loss of Anthony Tyus, at least for these couple of weeks, like, they don't really seem to have skipped a beat, again, except for that Miami of Ohio game, and that's just a decently tough defensive matchup for a MAC team, right? But Navarro's legs are such a difference maker sometimes. Actually, no, all the time, except for that, once again, that game against Miami of Ohio, he kind of sucked, or not sucked, he still had almost 40 yards on the ground. But outside of that, Buffalo, 81 yards, 167 yards versus, or 176 yards versus Central Michigan, 113 yards versus Akron, right? All that's fantastic. And the best part is, Kent State might be the best matchup that he gets this entire year, right? Looking at Kent State's defensive metrics here, again, going back to our team performance rankings over at C2C Winning Edge, Kent State is bottom five against the rush. That's going to be great for Navarro's legs. They are bottom 10 against the pass. They're just terrible across the board. Again, in fact, their total defensive rating for our team performance metric is the worst in the country. Kent State just flat out sucks. And even better for Ohio, they roll over and die. This is something that really has made me mad about Kent State the last couple of times they played. I mean, shoot, that Western Michigan game, Kent State gave up in that game. Like, Western Michigan was a team that if Kent State really tried, they absolutely could have put some points up on. But no, Western Michigan got out to a big lead. Kent State went into a shell. They kept running the ball. They just wanted to get out of there as quickly as possible. I don't know if that's the strategy the rest of the year, but it's great for whoever's playing them, because basically Ohio's going to be able to name the scoreboard against them this Saturday. Ohio's only favored by 18.5. I wouldn't be surprised if it was more if Kent State pulls the same crap that they pulled against Western Michigan here. So regardless, like, Navarro being locked in for 80-plus rushing yards feels pretty safe, I would say, and then it's just a matter of, can he get the touchdowns to go along with that? I mean, again, the word on Anthony Tyus hasn't been definitive or anything like that, but if he's not good to go again this weekend, I mean, shoot, Ricky Hunt's obviously pretty good in and of itself, but that just increases the likelihood that Navarro is probably going to be in for at least 3 touchdowns this weekend, and frankly, I don't see how, I don't see where there's a path for him kind of bottoming out this week. It'd be the ultimate, just, I don't even really know what to call it. It would be beyond a surprise to me if Navarro comes away with less than 25 fantasy points for this weekend. And considering some of the buys, some of the quarterbacks are on bye this week, this might be a key piece for you if you are looking to kind of plug the holes in the ship if you are struggling at quarterback this week. Another quarterback that I want to throw out here is a guy that, if I'm being frank, system-wise, I love Danny O'Neill there with Sean Lewis in San Diego State. But man, it just hasn't been there this year. Again, I personally thought that Sean Lewis was just CFF gold in terms of he came into Colorado, immediately made Shedeur Sanders a CFF star for the first half of that season. Turns out it might just be, again, I know it's weird to talk good about Colorado, but Shedeur Sanders is just a pretty dang good quarterback. And as long as your father's the head coach, he's going to make sure that you get stats. But regardless, like, I still believe in the Sean Lewis system here, but Danny O'Neill just has not lived up to what we typically expect out of a Sean Lewis quarterback. Now, there's a multitude of reasons for that, right? You're talking about, you know, first year head coach in the Mountain West, obviously hasn't gotten all of his players in. Danny O'Neill himself is a true freshman, right? Like, you can't expect too much out of a true freshman in their first year. Granted, it is the Mountain West. There's plenty of defenses to feast on, but that's exactly why I have him here as one of my starts for this week. Danny O'Neill has not broken 20 fantasy points in the last 5 weeks. I think he is pretty much locked in for that this weekend. He goes up against New Mexico, I talked about Kent State's defense being absolutely horrific. New Mexico's defense is not much further ahead. Again, in total defense, they're 132nd in our team performance ratings. Against the pass, they are the worst in the country. Against the run, they are bottom 10 here. So I'm trying to start as many San Diego State players as I possibly can this weekend. And the best part is Vegas is agreeing that San Diego State should be able to put up some points in this game. San Diego State's favored by 3 in this game. The total in this game is 65.5. Both of these defenses give up points, especially San Diego State on the ground. They're willing to give up points there, which is why I also like Eli Sanders for this week. But O'Neal doesn't need to even really pop off in this game in order to... He doesn't need to really pop off in this game too much to beat what he's been able to do over the last 5 weeks. He just needs to find a way to score 3 touchdowns. That's kind of been the main thing that's really held O'Neal back. Cooper obviously is going to be a big problem. He's going to score plenty in this game as well. But given the fact that, again, we're looking at a total that suggests both teams will be hitting the 30s in this game, I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility at all for O'Neal to find the end zone 3 times in this game. And the other thing is, we haven't really seen O'Neal's legs unlock that much. Granted, he had the injury earlier this season, which I do think has limited his legs. He did come into the season with the possibility of him kind of running the ball a little bit more. We just haven't seen that a lot recently. I'm not saying that it is going to change this weekend, but I do think that O'Neal is very much, given the matchup, in line for a really, really solid performance here. Especially since, again, New Mexico State, yeah, the over-under 65.5, there's a possibility for this game to go way over that. I mean, New Mexico just got done this past weekend with a shootout with Wyoming. Wyoming put up 49 on this defense. And their first-time starting quarterback, Caden Anderson, put up 31 points on them. Utah State, just a couple of weeks before, hung 45 on this defense. And Spencer Petras, who is not a dual-threat quarterback at all, was able to put up at least 29 points on this defense. So if those guys are able to put up points on this defense, I have no issue believing that Danny O'Neal is set to have himself a really good weekend. This is definitely a little bit more of a deeper play. There's definitely not a ton of, you know, your typical starting quarterbacks from this year that I would like put O'Neal in above. But if you, this is a perfect bye week plug in just to see what kind of happens. Let's move on to running backs. And I got two guys here that you guys know me. I love volume. I try to go for volume plays, but here's the deal. When you're dealing with guys outside the top 60 at running back, you got to look for guys that are expected to be efficient going into the weekend, because guys who are getting, you know, 15, 20 plus carries every single week are not sitting outside the top 60 in total points for the season, right? So first one up here I have is Floyd Chalk, running back out of San Jose State, a personal favorite of mine during the offseason. He's definitely had a bit of an up and down year for the most part, but in recent weeks, as San Jose State is trying to make this switch from Emmett Brown over to Walker Eyet at quarterback, Floyd Chalk is getting more and more involved, but they're relying on him more and more, right? Like, they, to get this offense moving, this passing game has not been as efficient as it had been in the first half of the season, which again makes me wonder why they're making the change at quarterback, but that's, I'm not the one paid to make that decision. But it does help Floyd Chalk quite a bit here, right? Again, he's been very efficient the last couple of weeks against Colorado State, 6.1 yards per carry. Against Wyoming, 7.6 yards per carry. Against Fresno State, 8.9 yards per carry. And he scored touchdowns galore in this stretch. Outside of last week, he has scored at least one touchdown in 4 of his last 5 games. He has scored 2 touchdowns each in his games against Nevada and Washington State there. And I think that he is set for another big performance this weekend. He's got Oregon State on deck here. And once again, going back to our team performance ratings over at C2C Winning Edge, Oregon State is atrocious against the run. They are bottom 2 in the country. Not bottom 2 in the conference. I guess there's only 2 of them. So I guess they're bottom two there as well. But not bottom two in the Power Four, not bottom two in, you know, on the West Coast. No, like, we're talking about bottom two in the entire freaking country. Like, they are performing worse than most G5 teams here. And you give me a hyper-efficient running back like Floyd Chalk going up against this bad of a rushing defense, I'm expecting some long touchdown runs in this game from Floyd Chalk here, especially if this game script allows for San Jose State to do so. Oregon State's favored by 3 in this game. Their total is 55.5, but given the skid that Oregon State's kind of been on over the last week or two, I wouldn't be surprised if San Jose State is able to grab a lead early in this game and potentially just kind of ride Chalk and Bates to victory in the entire second half here. I think that this is in line to potentially be Chalk's best game of the season, so that's why I have him as one of my starts for this week. The other running back that I want to throw out here is Mr. Travion Henderson, running back out of Ohio State. Oh, man, this Ohio State running back duo really has been a disappointment. There's really no other way to say it. Like, everything here suggested that Ohio State was going to have a dominant backfield duo, and this running game just has not really kicked off. And frankly, Travion Henderson has been the bigger, how do I say this? He's been hurt more by this than even Judkins. Judkins, the people who drafted him were right to grab him in terms of him being the better RB of the two to have for CFF, right? But I think that Henderson and Judkins both are incredible plays for this weekend. Why? Because, again, we're going back to the matchup here. Ohio State's going up against Purdue. Purdue might be the worst team in the Big Ten. It's a tough competition, but I think they're there. Their defense is to blame for a lot of it. Their rushing defense is bottom 10 in the country. Ohio State's favored by 38.5 points in this game. Ohio State, as I mentioned before, they have struggled to run the ball. They have really not been able to get that aspect of that offense going. Where better to get that right, to make sure the fundamentals of that running game are sound, than to just beat up on a poor Boilermaker defense that has been basically giving up a half a mile on the ground to every team that they face, right? I think Judkins and Henderson are both in for incredible games this weekend. I think that if Henderson wants to keep the draft stock that he had going into last year, he needs a big performance here. So, again, I would also put Judkins here, but he's inside the top 60 running backs. Henderson's outside the top 60 running backs, but this is more of me just saying, if you got an Ohio State running back this weekend, I think this is the weekend to start him. Henderson, I think, breaks for a long one at some point. Wide receivers. Man, I'm just a big fan of the Mountain West this week, apparently, because we got two more Mountain West. Well, I guess one of them's technically Pac-12, but let's be real, they're playing a Mountain West schedule. But two more West Coast wide receivers here to discuss. We'll talk about Chris Hudson here, wide receiver out of Washington State first. He's got Utah State. Once again, we're just beating up on some of these poor defenses. Utah State, they're bottom 10 in the country in against the pass. They're the worst in the country against the run. So that should help John Mateer a lot right there. But regardless, given Washington State's offense, given the matchup here, given the fact they're favored by 20.5, the over-under in this game, 69.5. Vegas is expecting a relatively high scoring, if not lopsided, game by Washington State here. I am betting on Hudson finding the end zone here, right? Before last week, Hudson had five straight games of double-digit targets. Now, that hasn't always translated into a ton of yardage, right? We've only seen a 100-yard game from him once in that stretch, and we've only seen him find the end zone twice during that stretch as well. Those things obviously need to change, but as I mentioned before, what better way to do that than to get yourself a nice, cushy matchup against one of the worst defenses here in the country, right? Hudson's a pretty solid receiver. I think this is the kind of game where if Mateer hits him right, could break a long one. I think that playing for volume here with Hudson is the way to go. I honestly wouldn't mind throwing out guys like Carlos Hernandez as well. I think the John Meredith dream is a little bit dead here. I think I still think that Hudson's your main guy here. But regardless, like, I just, if you have a piece of the Washington State offense this weekend, I'd probably try to go with that. Next wide receiver here to start is Mr. Ryan Davis, wide receiver out of New Mexico. I'll be quick about this one because I talked about him already on the waiver wire show earlier this week. But just to reiterate, Luke Wysong goes down. It looks like he'll be out for quite a bit here, given the fact that he was in a boot. I know Bronco Mendenhall tried to make it sound like that he was going to come back already this week. When I sniffed that out immediately and said, absolutely not. And guess what? Wysong did not play this past week, and I doubt he will play this week as well. And in the meantime, Ryan Davis has been going nuts. Again, 14 targets against Colorado State, 146 yards in that game. And then against Wyoming, 13 targets for 74 yards and a touchdown in that game as well. Davis has slid right into the wide receiver one role for this offense. New Mexico State's going up against San Diego State. Already kind of mentioned this game. Again, high over under of 65.5 here. San Diego State's only favored by 3, so both teams expected to put up points here. Davis, like Wysong, has kind of struggled to find the end zone, but again, a lot of that has to do with, you know, New Mexico just having a really good run game between Dampier and Sanders, so they steal a lot of the touchdowns. But if there is going to be a passing touchdown, I think Davis is a very good bet to find the end zone with one of those. So just to reiterate my starts of the week, again, my two quarterbacks are Parker Navarro, the quarterback out of Ohio, going up against Kent State, and then Danny O'Neill, quarterback out of San Diego State, going up against New Mexico. My starting two running backs are Floyd Chalk, running back out of San Jose State, going up against Oregon State, and then Travion Henderson, running back out of Ohio State, going up against Purdue this weekend. Then my two starting wide receivers are Chris Hudson, wide receiver out of Washington State, and Ryan Davis, wide receiver in New Mexico, going up against Utah State and San Diego State, respectively. So, moving on, let's talk about my sits for this week. As always, these are always a little bit tougher because of the parameters that I give myself, but I try to give you guys people that you might legitimately consider starting, and sometimes that causes me to stretch a little bit, but I am not going to stretch a little bit on these quarterbacks. I am concerned about Diego Pavia, the quarterback out of Vanderbilt, going up against South Carolina this weekend. Pavia is fantastic. Pavia is wonderful. I joked around with Justin last week about, like, oh, we can't sit Pavia. That's our Lord and Savior. He's one of the best people, or the best people to root for in college football right now. Well, love Vandy, but and obviously they're doing extremely well this year, but it is clear that their offense still can be stopped, right? And Pavia this past weekend starting to kind of get found out a little bit by some of these defenses. Against Auburn, he had almost less than 40% completion percentage, less than 150 yards. He's two straight weeks of less than 150 yards passing. The more concerning thing to me versus Auburn last week was the rushing total for Pavia, right? Against Ball State, you know, 82 yards. Against Texas, 76 or 67 yards, touchdown in both those games. Great, awesome, love it, Pavia. Against Auburn, 12 carries, 26 yards, 2.2 yards per rush. The defenses are really starting to kind of key in on Pavia's legs. And here's the thing. South Carolina has one of the best pass rushes in the country. And they don't have one of the best pass rushes in the country because they can take down a bunch of statue quarterbacks. They have one of the best pass rushes in the country because they got dudes on that defense that are able to keep up with the likes of Diego Pavia. I think that this is another rough week for Pavia in terms of the rushing department. I think South Carolina absolutely is going to be able to track down Pavia. He's going to have a low rushing total for the game. And from there, it's just a matter of, can Pavia improve his passing? And considering South Carolina's secondary is not too shabby against the pass either, I think this is a bad matchup for Pavia. I actually have South Carolina winning this game this weekend. As much as I love my Doors, like, I think that, again, it's just a bad matchup for Pavia. I would not feel comfortable starting him whatsoever. It also doesn't help, again, that this is a pretty low-scoring game. South Carolina favored by 3.5, so I guess me having South Carolina winning is not a huge upset. I said that as if, like, South Carolina, like, that'd be like an upset call. I didn't even realize that South Carolina was favored here. But it's also expected to be a pretty low scoring game overall. So even if Pavia, you know, has a decent day on the ground, like there's a world where he ends the game with two touchdowns and that's it. So the other quarterback that I'm willing to sit this week is Mr. Jake Retzlaff, the quarterback out of BYU. He's going up against Utah this weekend. Retzlaff and this BYU offense, as every time I talk about him, I gotta give him credit because I really just wrote off this offense completely to start the year, and they have surprised and good for them on that front. But I think this is a weekend where there is going to be some toughness for Retzlaff to get through here. Again, he's been fantastic the last couple of weeks against Oklahoma State. 30 fantasy points there against Central Florida, you know, 26 points there. His rushing totals have been great. Again, 81 yards on the ground versus Oklahoma State, almost 40 yards and a touchdown versus UCF there. But Utah is definitely one of the tougher defenses they're going to be facing. Utah is 13th in the country in defensive team performance, according to our numbers at C2C Winning Edge. And overall, this game's just expected to be relatively low scoring. Vegas has BYU favored by 3.5 here, but the total is almost below 40 here. So again, both teams expected to kind of hover in that low 20s range at best. And considering that, you know, BYU is getting, you know, LJ Martin back healthy, like there's a possibility of him siphoning some touchdowns away from Retzlaff, even if you're counting on, you know, two touchdowns there, there's a decent chance that there's a lot of field goals in this game that would really limit Retzlaff's ability to kind of put up some numbers. I'm not saying it's impossible, right? Again, Utah, there's something wrong with Utah right now where that team is just not clicking. I don't know if it's Kyle Whittingham's impending retirement or what's going on. I mean, shoot, Alexander Ludwig got dropped and I forget who they brought in for the interim offensive coordinator position, but it's not an inspiring hire whatsoever. So maybe there's just a lot of things in the background that we're just not seeing that have really thrown this team off. Regardless, I still don't think that BYU is going to be able to put up more than 24 points this weekend. And so I think Retzlaff is very much a sit for this week. Don't expect what he's been able to do over the last couple of weeks to continue this week. Running backs. Let's talk about some running backs here. And my first running back that I'm throwing out here as a sit is Mr. Jaden Nixon, the running back out of Western Michigan. Outside of a bizarre performance against Akron, where, you know, 14 carries, 21 yards. I don't know what the heck was happening to Nixon that day. I don't know if he had a stomach bug, his girlfriend broke up with him the night before or something. 1.5 yards per rush versus Akron is just something that nobody can ever predict. But outside of that, dude's been a monster, just a straight up monster. Like you're like, this is a classic power four back transferring down to the MAC and just bullying a bunch of little kids, right? Against Bethune-Cookman, 17 carries, 189 yards, two touchdowns. Against Marshall, 23 carries, 146 yards, and a touchdown there. Even in recent weeks, right, where he's just not getting the volume that he once was getting with Jalen Buckley back, right? Against Ball State, still 124 yards on 14 carries. Against Buffalo, 112 yards on 14 carries. And then this past week against Kent State, 135 yards on 8 carries. Just dude's just ripping it every time he gets the ball. Problem is, and I use a legit defense, they're 18th in the country in defensive team performance. Their rushing is top 15, according to our metrics at C2C Winning Edge. And I use favored by 2 points in this game. The total is 52.5. This is not the kind of game where Western Michigan is going to be able to put up 59 points. They're not going to be able to put up 45 points, 34 points, 48 points, 52 points. This will be a lower scoring affair. Now, we've seen already that Nixon can still thrive in that environment, right? Against Marshall, Western Michigan only put up 20 points, but he still had almost 150 yards on the ground. So there's a possibility here of Nixon still doing fine, and even with these defensive performance numbers from NIU, Nixon could still out-talent a lot of guys on that Husky defense there. Problem is, I think you're playing with fire there a little bit. Like if you're plugging in Nixon, you're hoping for some upside there that will help you win the week, but also know that you're plugging in a guy that could finish the day with, you know, anywhere from 8 to 15 carries, but suddenly that efficiency that we've seen over the last couple of weeks drops down to, you know, 4.5, 5 yards a carry, doesn't find the end zone. You're ending the day with potential single-digit performance in fantasy here. It does not help that Nixon does not catch a lot of balls out of the backfield, right? He's had a total of, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 targets over the last 6 games. So if you're hoping for, you know, NIU to put up some points against Western Michigan's defense and for Nixon to kind of catch some balls out of the backfield, that's just straight up not what he does. Now, like I said, there's still a possibility that Nixon just out-talents everybody. And again, a little bit of stretch here. But given the low volume, given tough matchup, I think that if you're relying on Nixon, you have to be a little worried about what you're going to see this weekend. I would potentially look for other options. Next running back that I want to discuss here is Mr. Anthony Hankerson, the running back out of Oregon State, going up against San Jose State this weekend. I already talked about the other running back on the other side of this. I think Floyd Chalk's in for a great weekend. I think Anthony Hankerson's in for a bit of a tough weekend here. Hankerson, over the last couple of weeks, has definitely been hurt by Oregon State's inability to get a lead in the game, right? To start the season, Oregon State actually looked pretty solid. They were able to get some leads early in games. With Jameis Griffin going down, Hankerson became the clear RB1 for this team, and he was looking really, really good. Over the last couple of weeks, though, there's some trouble in paradise here with Hankerson, right? He still has the volume, again, 16 carries versus Cal, 17 carries versus UNLV, but I don't know if this, these defenses really keying in on him, this offense in general just not really gelling, but 49 yards versus Cal, 61 yards versus UNLV, that's tough. One touchdown between his last two games, and even then, you're not looking at anything that's really blown you away. Again, 13.5 fantasy points in terms of half PPR points against UNLV, 7.8 versus Cal. Now, granted, Oregon State got just completely run out of the building on that one, so you can call that an outlier, but I'm seeing a trend here over the last couple of weeks that Hankerson's just not performing to the degree that he was to start the season. And we get San Jose State this weekend. Again, mentioned already, Oregon State is favored in this game by 3. I'm personally leaning towards San Jose State being the one to be able to grab an early lead here, in which case that hurts Hankerson a bit. Although he definitely does catch plenty of balls out of the backfield. He's got 12 targets over his last 3 games, so he's not completely out of it, right? But he's also not very explosive out of the backfield either. Again, you're looking at, you know, 3.7 yards per catch, 2 yards per catch, and 4.7 yards per catch in his last 3 games. So not exactly a world beater on that front. But again, we see it against UNLV. We see it against Cal. Cal's a pretty solid defense, but UNLV's rushing defense is not anything to write home about. And he struggled against them as well. So I'm sensing a trend here. I'm thinking Hankerson has another rough week against San Jose State here, especially if San Jose State's able to grab a lead early. So I will be sitting Hankerson in leagues where I can and trying to find a different option at running back. So that being said, let's move on to wide receivers. And I'm going to be real with you guys. Just like in a lot of other weeks, wide receivers, this is where I am going to probably stretch the most. Because, like, wide receivers, it's so weird doing these. Because, like, wide receiver is the most volatile position in college fantasy outside of tight end, right? Of the main 3 positions, like, wide receiver is easily the most volatile. But so you would think that would make it kind of easier to point out, like, oh, this player is not going to be do very well this week because, you know, he has a wider range of outcomes. So I'm thinking he's on the lower end of his outcomes this weekend. But I don't know, man. Again, like, whether it's just matchups, whether it's just the certain guys being on bye and everything, it just feels like week after week, man, like there's not a ton of great options for me to talk about. So I feel like I'm stretching here. But the first wide receiver that I don't even know if I'm going to fully sit him because, again, a PPR format, he's gold. But Ty Felton, wide receiver out of Maryland, he's going up against Oregon this week, and Oregon's passing defense has been absolutely incredible. Again, they're 5th in the nation in our C2C team performance metric against the pass here, and Oregon's favored by 25 points in this game, so clearly Maryland's going to be playing from behind. That all sounds fine and dandy, but again, this Oregon defense has been very, very stout this year. And Felton's really, really struggled to find the end zone many, many times. And he is not one to not put up some stinkers here, right? against Northwestern again. 19 targets in that game, but he only caught 9 of them for 77 yards. And again, it feels like I'm stretching here because, like, you know, nine catches, 77 yards in any given week is incredible, but that's only because he got 19 targets in that game. If he got closer to his 12, right, you're looking at him finishing the day with almost sub 60 yards in that game if he got a normal target distribution. Again, in a full PPR format, I still don't think there's any way you can really sit Felton, but in a standard league, I'm definitely considering looking elsewhere for Felton. I don't think Oregon's going to give up a ton of points to the likes of Maryland. I even if they do, Felton over the last couple of weeks has clearly not been a priority for Maryland in the end zones, right? He's had one touchdown over his last three games, despite the monster number of targets that he has been getting. So again, PPR format, I don't think there's any way you can sit Felton, but in a standard format, I'm definitely considering it, and I'm looking elsewhere at wide receiver. Other wide receiver that I am sitting for this week is one Denzel Boston. I talked about earlier this season how touchdown regression would come for him, and it has a little bit. He's had one touchdown over his last three games, despite the fact that, again, very similar to Felton, right? He's getting the targets, right? Nine targets, 15 targets over his last three games. Kind of a rough stretch there between Iowa and Indiana, where he didn't even break 50 yards in either of those games, despite getting nine targets. And that's kind of my main concern here, is he's going up against Penn State. Penn State's coming off the loss to Ohio State. They're kind of pissed off. They need something to beat up on. They're favored by 13 against Washington here. I think Penn State's got the corners to potentially have, or potentially give Boston another rough day here, right? I wouldn't be shocked at all if we got another line similar to what he had against Iowa and Indiana, you know, sub 50 yards. Maybe he pulls in a touchdown. Again, Washington is very clear about their intent to target him on the outside in the red zone. But against this Penn State defense, I'm really not even sure that Penn State's really going to give up all that much to Washington this week, especially with when you have a low over under here, 46.5 here. I mean, if you extrapolate, like, or if you kind of extrapolate the team totals out of the spread and total here, right, you are looking at, you know, Vegas expecting, you know, Washington to probably find the end zone once or twice here, given the fact they're kind of spotting them 16, 17 points here. But I still don't know that I would really love betting on that, considering, again, I don't think there's really much of a weakness in this Penn State defense right about now. So outside of, unless you're Ohio State. So that being said, let's move on to our, let me recap. My sits for this week, quarterbacks are Diego Pavia and Jake Retzlaff. I feel pretty confident about those. Jaden Nixon and Anthony Hankerson, two running backs that have been very solid at times this year that I think have tough matchups this week that are going to cause them to get much lower. Less confident in this call than the quarterbacks. And then my wide receivers, Ty Felton, wide receiver out of Maryland, and Denzel Boston, wide receiver out of Washington. Tough matchups for both of them, going up against the top teams in the Big Ten, or two of the top teams in the Big Ten here. And I'm not really all that confident in this call at all. I think there's still a way, given the volume that they have, for them to have really solid weeks, especially in PPR formats. My question is just, do they find the end zone? I'm calling that they don't. So that means they're going to score four touchdowns between the two of them, if you guys know how this works. So all that being said, let's move on over to our fan submitted start sick questions. And I once again appreciate all of you guys out there who are coming to me week to week with your start sick questions. I really enjoy helping you guys out as much as I can. By the way, if you ever DM me or you at me on Twitter and I don't answer your question again, please don't take it personally and everything like that. I really try to do my best to get to everybody's question as best I can. I'm just also a very forgetful person. A lot of times I have a really, really bad habit of seeing a message, opening it up, reading it, and being like, oh, I don't have time right now to answer this. I'll come back to it later, and then completely forget to come back to it later. So if you ever ask me a question and, you know, half a day goes by, just send me a little bump message as just a little reminder sometimes. Now, don't be rude about it. Obviously, I've had people be, you know, jackasses about it before, And those people I don't like responding to. But if you just say like, hey, did you get a chance to look at this yet? Or just, again, literally just putting asterisk bump asterisk to just kind of give me a little bump or send me a little gift or just something to remind me, something a little kind, I will do my best to get back to you. Again, apologies if I've ever not gotten to one of y'all's messages before. With all that being said, if you want to get your questions for the Start Sit on the show, the best way to do that is to follow the @ChasingTheNatty account. I put a message out every single week, and that is the first place that I look. You can also drop them in the comment section of the Waiver Wire shows. I try to look there as well. Or you can DM them to me and just say like, hey, for the show, here's my sit start question. I'll try to get those in as well. With all that being said, let's take a look at our first question here submitted to us by Brandon Kaiser at BrandonKaiser17 on Twitter. In a 5-point passing touchdown league, are we looking at Kyle McCord, who's going up against Boston College, or do we look at Brennan Sorsby, the quarterback out of Cincinnati, going up against West Virginia? This is an interesting and fun question, in my opinion, because you're dealing with two quarterbacks here that are both on skids the last couple of weeks, right? Neither one of these guys have really given you what you want in a CFF format, right? Take a look at Kyle McCord. 20 fantasy points versus NC State, only put up 24 points in that game. Against Pitt, 15 points in that game, 5 interceptions. So if you got a league that penalizes you for turnovers, boy oh boy, did you not have a fun night that night. I know I didn't. And then this past week, even against Virginia Tech, where, you know, Syracuse came back, they won, they, you know, played from behind to win this game, Kyle McCord still was not at the center of that. He actually had one of his lowest passing attempt numbers in that game, despite playing from behind at 35 and less than 300 yards passing and only 2 touchdowns to show for it, right? To start the season, Kyle McCord was the show for Syracuse. I don't know if it's that this 5 interception game against Pitt changed anything, but if what we saw versus Va Tech is to go by, he's not currently the focus of this offense, at least for right now, which is definitely concerning moving forward. I kind of touched on this a little bit during the waiver show earlier this week when we took a look at the freakout scale. But then let's look at Brennan Sorsby, right? He also has not been fantastic. Against UCF, 20 fantasy points there. Against Arizona State, 22 fantasy points. Against Colorado, 20 fantasy points, right? Not bottoming out, right? We're not looking at a guy that's, you know, completely useless for CFF, right? If you're in, especially in a deeper league, right? Like 20 fantasy points for a quarterback, like, isn't great, but it's not going to be something that costs you your entire week, right? The question really here comes down to which quarterback can bounce back better, right? Because I think that both of these quarterbacks have what it takes to bounce back and be CFF players moving forward, right? Whether that's, you know, McCord going back to throwing 40 to 60 times per game, and then Brennan Sorsby really just finding a better matchup, right? Because we look at UCF, we look at Arizona State, we look at Colorado, right? One, that UCF game was just weirdly low scoring. Both teams were actually able to move the ball quite a bit in that game. Neither team could really finish the job. So I think that game is a little bit of an outlier. Like, I think if those teams played more, or if you were to play those teams 100 times again, I think that that game goes over the 32 points that they scored in that game total between those two teams. I think it goes over that total probably 90 out of 100 times, right? I think that game was just weirdly low scoring. So I don't want to knock Sorsby too much for that. And then Arizona State and Colorado, again, this is going to be a weird show because I'm giving Colorado quite a bit of props here, but Colorado's defense is much improved compared to last year, and they are absolutely taking advantage of it. They're actually shutting down teams pretty well. So all that being said, this is why I'm kind of leaning towards Sorsby, right? I think Sorsby has been the product of just some relatively quietly tough defensive matchups over the last couple of weeks. He still has performed admirably despite that, and I think going up against West Virginia this week, he has himself a matchup that I think he can take advantage of, right? West Virginia's secondary is atrocious. They are bottom two in the country in passing defensive team performance, according to our C2C numbers, right? He can absolutely take advantage of that. He's got the weapons to do so. And with West Virginia actually being top 20 in rushing, they got a real Jekyll and Hyde defense over there. They're not going to be able to rely on Kiner. They're not going to be able to rely on Pryor as much. Sorsby's rushing probably does take a hit here, so I wouldn't be shocked if we get a game kind of like Arizona State where he finishes the game probably around 25 to 30 rushing yards. But as long as he can run it around the goal line, that's really all that matters at the end of the day. Versus Kyle McCord, man, I expect to bounce back at some point here, but I am a little worried about his role in this offense moving forward and them kind of throttling him back a little bit as a kind of centerpiece for this offense. In addition, if you take the team totals of both of these teams, Cincinnati's actually expected to score more compared to Syracuse, so I'm going to lean towards Sorsby of these two. Give me some dual threat ability there and the better matchup, in my opinion. So, Brandon, hope that answers your question. Even with the 5-point passing touchdown league, I think there's a possibility that Sorsby and Kyle McCord could end up with the same number of passing touchdowns this weekend, given just recent trends. So, in terms of what our C2C projections are saying versus what my projections are saying, so our C2C projections actually have Kyle McCord as the favorite here. They have him at 23.8 fantasy points here. Brendan Sorsby is 20.9, according to our C2C projections. My projections disagree. They have Brendan Sorsby at 31.9. They have Kyle McCord at 26.5. So my projections are very much expecting both of these quarterbacks to bounce back a little bit this weekend, but they like the upside of Brendan Sorsby here a little bit. I think my projections very much have to do with, you know, West Virginia's secondary just being so atrocious is probably bumping him up a little bit more than he deserves, if I'm being honest. Like, I wouldn't expect him to score 30 plus fantasy points this weekend, but as of right now, I think he's the better bet out of these two, Brandon, so I would go with Sorsby. Let's move on to our second question here. This one comes to us from Mr. David Harden at Never Not Gruntled on Twitter. He's asking me to pick between three flex players here. We got in a full PPR league, we got Damian Martinez, the running back out of Miami, going up against Georgia Tech. We have Trey Wisner, the running back out of Texas, going up against Florida. Or we can go with Jacoby Jones, the wide receiver, going up against Arizona State this weekend. Taking a look at these matchups, right? It is weird to say that Georgia Tech's like actually really solid against the run. Like, I was thinking it might be a mirage at the beginning of the season, right? Because they looked really solid against Florida State. And I was thinking, like, oh, wow, it's much improved. But then we found out that Florida State's offense just kind of sinks for the most part. And I started thinking to myself, like, oh, maybe Georgia Tech's rushing defense kind of gets exposed here at one point. Well, here we are getting to the, you know, late portion of the season. And Georgia Tech's rushing defense is actually still top 20 in the country. Now, do I think Miami is good enough to potentially overcome that? Yes. But when you look at Georgia Tech's secondary, they're 91st in the country in passing defense team performance. We all know Cam Ward's going for the Heisman campaign. They're going to chuck the ball over the field. And given the fact that Damian Martinez is in the middle of a committee where he's basically capped at, you know, 15, 16 touches a game, which, you know, there are far worse volume totals to have in a committee, right? But even still, his production's kind of capped there. I wouldn't be shocked if we're in for another game like we got this past week against Duke, right? Where, you know, 11 carries, 66 yards on the ground, 2 catches, 19 yards. Basically ends the day right around 10 fantasy points. Not the worst thing in the world, right? But definitely not something that's going to win you your week. Versus a guy like Trey Wisner, I'm starting Trey Wisner of these three. And I'll be sitting Jones and Martinez. Wisner is slowly but surely really creeping up as the number one back for Texas. Now, none of these backs have performed like your typical Steve Sarkisian back. This is going to go down as an anomaly year for Steve Sarkisian, and we will all pray as CFF folks that this is an anomaly and not a new trend for Steve Sarkisian. But regardless, Weiser is creeping up in that total, right? Again, we had, you know, 13 carries versus Oklahoma, 15 carries versus UGA, 17 carries versus Vanderbilt, slowly kind of getting up there. And man, these target numbers are getting out of control. 4 targets versus Oklahoma, 10 targets versus UGA, 6 targets versus Vanderbilt, right? Like, you're talking about 14 receptions over the past 3 games in a PPR format, which this question is referring to. I don't really know how you pass that up, because even if you look at Jacoby Jones, who's the wide receiver in this scenario, his target numbers aren't fantastic. 8 targets, 5 targets over the last 2 games. Yeah, he's been hyper efficient with them, like 20 yards per catch, which is obviously great, but he's got 6 and 5 receptions over the last 2 games. Weisner himself might be able to reach 5-6 catches any given game and kind of cancel out that PPR advantage that Jacoby Jones might have there. The only difference is obviously Weisner's not going to be as efficient with every single one of his touches, but Weisner's going to get the 15 to 17 to 18 touches against Florida, right? And it's not like Florida's defense is anything that's like stout that's gonna be able to shut down Texas. Shoot, they're running backups at multiple positions, so Texas should be able to handle Florida pretty easily. I mean, shoot, they're favored by almost over 3 touchdowns here. I think Weisner gets this. Might be Weisner's biggest game this weekend, and I'm a very, very big proponent of Weisner among these 3 options here. I like Jones. I think he's a fun option when you don't have other options. And right now, I think you have a fantastic option in Weisner. Let's take a look at what we have in our models, both our C2C projections and my own projections here. C2C projections, I'll be real, I don't know where this number's coming from, but it actually has Demian Martinez at 21.95 fantasy points. I'm actually going to, let me double check that real quick. I'm going to refresh our rankings because I know Mox does some tinkering sometimes during the week in terms of updating numbers. Nope, we're still sitting at 21.95 fantasy points. I'll be real, I'm not entirely sure where that number is coming from, because again, this is a tough rushing matchup here for Miami. Martinez does not get the volume to really warrant a projection like that in my opinion. So as much as I love our rankings over at C2C, I'm going to have to disagree with them on this one, because my projections have Damian Martinez down at 8.5 fantasy points for this game. Our C2C winning projections have Trey Weisner at 17 points. My projections have him at 11.9. I'll be real, I think it's still, my projections are factoring in a little bit too much of the early season performances. They have not really caught this late breaking surge that Weisner's starting to get here towards the end of the season. So I'm going to go with, or like I said, I'm still going to go with Weisner of these 3 options. I think that he's got the best matchup here. I think he's got the best game script. I think he's got the best volume. No doubt about it, in my opinion. So, David, there's your choice. Let's move on to, let me put back our tokens there. There we go. There we go. Let's move on to our 3rd question here. This one comes to us from the optimistic Vikings fan at Super Skull Fan. By the way, very, I hope you're enjoying yourself, Super Skull Fan, because your Vikings, your optimism is being rewarded this season, although they've been on a little bit of skid recently, but I won't mention that. Anyway, he's asking me to start 1 wide receiver between 3 different options here. We got Ted Hurst, the wide receiver out of Georgia State, going up against James Madison. We got Josh Kelly, the wide receiver out of Texas Tech, going up against Colorado. And then we got Jeremy Bernard, the wide receiver out of Alabama, going up against LSU. So, where do we go from here? Because all 3 of these guys have reasons to be optimistic, right? Jeremy Bernard, I guess we'll start with him because he's kind of the most interesting one. He has kind of flown under the radar a little bit recently in terms of his production, right? His target numbers still aren't fantastic, right? 7 targets, 7 targets, 6 targets over his last 3 games. But he's been able to bring the ball in, right? Again, five catches. Like, he is well above catching more than half of these balls. And he's been hyper-efficient. 22.3 yards per catch against South Carolina, 14.4 yards per catch versus Tennessee, 16.4 yards per catch against Mizzou. Like, he's become a legit downfield threat for Alabama recently. And do I trust that this is going to continue against LSU? I don't really see any reason why not. I know LSU's defense is vastly improved from last year. Don't get me wrong there. But, you know, his production has been very consistent the last couple weeks. 89 yards, 72 yards, 82 yards. I mean, that's 72 yards versus Tennessee. It doesn't sound like much, but, like, that's a solid Tennessee defense that he was able to put that up on. So I see no reason why he can't do that again against LSU. It's just a matter of, can he find the end zone? I think he can. So I think Bernard is a solid play among these three. It's just a matter of, do I think that he can perform that well compared to the other two? Hurst is an interesting one. He is definitely the most volatile of the bunch here, which sounds crazy because his actual fantasy output has been relatively consistent. You know, 17 points versus Old Dominion, 13 points versus App State, 18 points versus UConn. Right, but then you got that little game in there against Marshall where he had 6 targets, only 1 catch for 15 yards. Right, and to add to the volatility, that App State game that I mentioned where he had 57 yards and a touchdown in that game, he did only 3 targets. So his target numbers have kind of gone up and down. His production has kind of come up and down, and there's no real correlation with it. There's no, like, oh, well, he had a tough defensive matchup this week, right? App State's horrific against the pass. Why did he only get 3 targets in that game? Marshall is horrific on defense. Why did he only get 1 catch in that game? UConn was actually one of the tougher defenses that Georgia State's had to play. And at least according to our numbers, the C2C winning edge. And he caught every ball thrown his way, almost hit 100 yards, got a touchdown out of it. Like, Hurst is very, very volatile. And of the three guys here, he's actually got easily the worst matchup, right? You're going up against James Madison. They're 15th in the country in total defensive team performance here. Their passing defense is top 25. Their rushing defense is top 25. I think that Georgia State is in for a tough time this weekend. Again, James Madison's favored by 17 points here. So I'm actually going to go ahead and sit Hurst with the volatility on different levels and everything. I think we can find some more consistency between Josh Kelly and Jeremy Bernard compared to him. So this leaves Josh Kelly. He goes up against Colorado this weekend. Third time today I'm praising Colorado, but Colorado's defense, been pretty solid. But I still think I'm going to go with Josh Kelly here. He blows Bernard out of the water when it comes to volume, right? His worst game of the last three games was 8 targets. Otherwise, he had 12 targets, and shoot, this past week against Iowa State, he had 19 targets. He only caught 8 of them, but regardless, like, they were force-feeding him against Iowa State last week, and that, like, Iowa State's defense, pretty dang solid. So the fact he was able to put up over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns on that Iowa State defense, pretty solid work by Josh Kelly there. And as much as I'm praising, like, Colorado's defense, again, their top 45 against the pass, right, which is, again, you know, not elite or anything like that, but it's vastly improved compared to last year. If you look at the Vegas total for this game, 62.5, Colorado only favored by 3.5. Both these teams are expected to score this weekend. It's not, you know, full-blown shootout level, but, you know, both teams expected to kind of hit the 30-point range here, you know, at least high 28. I see no reason why Josh Kelly can't find the end zone again this weekend, so I'm going to roll with him over Bernard and Hurst here. Let's take a look at what our projections at C2C Winning Edge have to say. Our C2C Winning Edge numbers actually have Josh Kelly performing the best of the bunch at about 14 points there. Compare that to Ted Hurst, who our projections have at 13.8, and Jeremy Bernard at 11.69. My projections actually have Jeremy Bernard as the highest projected receiver here at 10.9, barely edging Josh Kelly at 10.7. Ted Hurst, easily the worst of the bunch at 8.6. My projections don't really like any of these three guys. I think my projections are being a little harsh on both Kelly and Bernard here, but regardless, I'm going to disagree with my projections. I'm going to agree with the C2C winning edge projections. I'm going to go with Josh Kelly over Bernard and Hurst. So let's put our tokens back here. And then we still got two more questions to get through. My goodness, I've actually been pretty long-winded on these questions. I've been usually a lot better about getting through these faster, but that's fine. I just hope that you guys are enjoying the analysis. Let's take a look at Sean's question here at edhug77 on Twitter. He is asking us between three wide receivers here as well in a one PPR format with a yardage bonus for over 100 yards receiving. He is asking us between Cam Shanks, wide receiver out of UAB, or we can go with Otto Tia, the wide receiver out of Utah State, or we can go Kyron Lacey, the wide receiver out of LSU. Three interesting options. Who do I start with here? We'll go ahead and start with Kyron. We'll go with Otto Tia. So Otto Tia is an interesting case, right? Because Jalen Royals is gone, right? Done for the year. You can believe him or not, whether or not he's like truly injured enough to really be out the rest of the year or not. But regardless, like, he's gone. Otto Tia expected to take up that outside receiver position. And against Wyoming, it looks like we kind of, or so we get eight targets. So against New Mexico, which is the first game that Utah State played without Royals, eight targets, four catches, 29 yards, and a touchdown. Not awe-inspiring, especially considering that New Mexico's defense is absolutely atrocious, right? Otto Tia should have been able to perform better there. But he followed it up against Wyoming. Nine targets, six catches, 76 yards, and a touchdown there. Definitely looking a little bit closer to Royals. Not a world beater like Royals by any stretch, but seems like he's kind of moving back up into that role, right? Do I think he's able to do it against Washington State this weekend? That remains to be seen, right? The volume's definitely there. Again, 8 to 9 targets is perfectly good. Do I think he hits a 100 yards bonus? I'm not entirely sure about that. Washington State, they have some weakness in their run defense, but their passing defense is pretty solid at 51st in the country, according to our team performance metrics. So I am not going to definitively start Tia just yet. Shanks is also an interesting one because he's been on an absolute tear the last couple of weeks. But the problem is that he hasn't been able to put everything together into one performance, right? Because against Army, ton of targets, really good production, 119 yards, no touchdowns. Against South Florida, ton of targets, 11 of targets, but no touchdowns and very little performance to show for with only 36 yards receiving. Then against Tulsa, 153 yards, three touchdowns, monster game. Targets went down, seven targets. So you're kind of sitting there wondering, like, all right, when can we get all of this together into one massive performance? I say that as if his performance against Tulsa wasn't already massive in and of itself. I think that Shanks has an opportunity to really kind of show one big performance here. The problem is he's got UConn. And, stop helmet scouting. UConn, their defense, pretty solid. They're 32nd in the country versus the pass, according to our team performance ratings at CSC Winning Edge. So I think that there is some reason to be worried there. And then last but not least, let's take a look at Kyron Lacey, right? Lacey has hit that magic 100-yard threshold over two of his last three games, 111 yards versus Ole Miss, 106 yards versus Texas A&M. Clearly the top option for this, LSU passing game, right? So it really just comes down to, like, gut feel here. Lacey's going up against Alabama. They're pretty tough against the pass, the 12th in the country, according to our team performance ratings over at C2C Winning Edge. But I am not entirely sure that that's something, like, to me, that is like the area that Alabama's defense can get picked on, right? We saw it with Carson Beck in the second half there. We've seen it with other teams. Vanderbilt, not that they were going bombs away on Bama or anything like that, but that secondary can be taken advantage of. So I think there's a path for Lacy there. I think my definitive start, though, after kind of talking through all these guys, is Otto Tia. When you got that 100-yard bonus threshold here, as Sean does for this league, I don't see how you can start a guy like Tia that just hasn't done that yet. Versus, you know, both Lacy and Shanks have had 200-yard games in their last three games. So I think Tia is a pretty easy sit until we get some confirmation that he's clearly the main guy at Utah State, probably this week. And then it's just a matter of what do I think between Cameron Shanks and Lacy. And I think I'm going to lean towards Shanks, mostly because I think that one, UConn, as well as they performed on defense so far this year, they are still a G5 team. And that means that with the wrong singular matchup, Shanks could go off in that game. And also, UAB's offense has really been on a pretty big resurgence over the last couple of games here, ever since their absolute drudging by Army, right? Like, their offense seems to get better and better each week. UConn's favored by almost a touchdown in this game, but I could see UAB catching the Huskies off guard here, and Shanks being a huge part of that. Again, if we can get another 10-plus target game here, I think Shanks could be absolutely dynamite. Versus Lacy, man, it's tough, because I think Lacy and Shanks are both really good plays this week. We'll take a look at what our projections have to say, though. Our projections completely disagree with me, actually. C2C winning, or our C2C projections have Otto Tia as the play here at 16, almost 17 points here. They have Lacy at 13 points and have Shanks at 10. My projections actually also have Lacy ahead of Shanks, so I'm going against my projections here by picking Shanks. I think Lacy... Ed, if you're listening to this and you decide based on what I said that you'd rather go with Lacy, it would not hurt my feelings whatsoever. I just personally, like, coin flip, I'm going with Shanks. And then my projections have Otto Tia as the lowest of the bunch. I think that one, that's, again, once again, baking it a bit too much of the early season production. But also, again, there's a bit more volatility there with that receiving position. So I don't mind the fact that he's behind the other guys. So I'm going with Shanks. Both of our models have Lacy over Shanks. So decide what you will on that, Sean. So last question here. This one comes to us from Iggy69 on Twitter, at Iggy69 or IYG. I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce that. Regardless, he wants me to pick one of three guys here between Rashul Faison versus Wazoo. We have Desmond Reed, running back out of Pittsburgh, going up against Virginia. Or we can go with Amari Thomas, the wide receiver out of UAB, going up against UConn. Again, full PPR here. And ironically, I just realized we're going to be talking about a lot of the same matchups here. We just got totally different players, which that's kind of fun. This is one of those deals where I actually think all three of these options have really, really good potential this weekend, right? With Amari Thomas, you know, going up against UConn, he's been fantastic. He's had 9-plus targets in each of his last three games. He's had 84-plus yards in two of his last three games. He's had a touchdown at least in each of his last three games. That's a recipe to keep going and be wonderful for CFF moving forward. I am still a little queasy about that UConn matchup a little bit, but I do think UAB can overcome it. Problem is, again, you got a stud here in Desmond Reed, and it's hard to really move off of him. And you can say, like, he's not been great the last couple of weeks, right? Like, he's had, you know, that Syracuse game was weird all around for Pittsburgh. The three defensive touchdowns, the entire offense basically shut down. They saved Reed. He only had 11 carries, 47 yards. They took him off the field as quick as they could. He was getting banged up anyway. And then at SMU last week, one Pitt was playing from behind. But even still, like, he finishes the day with 18.3 fantasy points in half PPR format. So you're not entirely disappointed about what you got out of Reed there. Even more so, again, those 13 targets that he had in that game were just absolutely monstrous. Six catches, 44 yards. Right, so I think that Reed going up against Virginia this weekend, who is 82nd in the country versus the run, and even more importantly for Reed's game, because he is a epic receiver out of the backfield. Virginia is 123rd against the pass, according to our numbers at C2C Winning Edge. And that, to me, honestly, spells more importance for Reed's potential this upcoming weekend than anything else, because he's an extremely explosive receiver. So I'm still leaning towards Reed compared to Amari Thomas. Again, PPR would definitely help Amari Thomas's case in this case, but given the fact that Reed catches a ton of balls out of the backfield, I think that he is set for another pretty big performance this weekend against Virginia. And that leaves Rasul Faison, who's actually, again, he's the volume play of these guys, and he's got the PPR points to go along with it. He goes up against Wazoo this weekend, who I mentioned earlier, I don't love them versus the pass, but their rushing defense is pretty susceptible. They're 106th in the country when it comes to team performance defending the run. Problem is, Utah State is going to be playing from behind in this game. And that hasn't stopped Utah State from, you know, riding Faison regardless, right? He's still got 15 carries versus UNLV when they were behind there. He still finishes the day with 83 yards and a touchdown. Like, he's clearly still their workhorse back. Like I said, Iggy, this better be an absolutely incredible team that makes it to where you have to sit two of these guys, because I don't think there's really a way. Like, I would try to find a way to fit all three of these guys in, because I think all three of these guys have a chance for some epic performances this weekend. But if you're having to make me choose, I'm going to go with Reed and sit Faison and Amari Thomas. Let's take a look at what our projections say, though. At C2C Winning Edge, both mine and our C2C projections have Thomas doing the worst of the bunch by actually a pretty good margin. Our C2C projections have him at 9.8 points. My projection have him at 10 points. If you were asking me over under on that, like 10 points, I bet you Amari Thomas gets over 10 points. But regardless, like, compare that to the numbers that our projections are showing for Faison and Reed, and you can see that Thomas is clearly in third place here. Reed himself has 19.6 points in our C2C projections. My projections have him all the way up at 25.2. So that should tell you a lot about what kind of potential he has. And then Faison, our projections are almost in line. Like, our C2C projections have him at 18.7 fantasy points. My projections have him at 18.4. I think that, again, Faison and Reed are both excellent plays this weekend. I think you absolutely should find a way to get both of them in your lineup. But my projections and C2C's projections agree with each other. They have Reed as the play here, so I'm going to agree with them, and we'll go with that. All right. With that being said, appreciate you guys joining in. Let's see. Anything I forgot? Nope. Yeah, but that's it. We come to the end of our show. Appreciate all of you guys for listening. If you guys have not already, leave a like, comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on the YouTube. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show. Leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you go and check out the rest of the Campus of Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here on Monday for another round of waiver wires. Hopefully, you have locked up your playoff spots, or you are getting ready to lock up your playoff spots if you're in a 4-team playoff league. Until then, really appreciate you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.